You ready to continue the safari? Okay, so tonight we're going to be looking at the whole issue, and it's only a brief look because there's no way you can cover all of the issues related to various bones that have been found that supposedly illustrate that we have come from an ape-like creature. But I call this program Aunt Lucy for a number of reasons that you'll see, but the whole idea behind this program is going to be looking at what some of the evolutionists have done to try to convince us that we came from an ape. And that's all it is. It's going to be looking at some signposts along the way and some of the interesting ways that they have been interpreted. So that's what this program's about. Call it Aunt Lucy, kind of based on Johansson's discovery of the Lucy skeleton, and so you'll see that as we go through the program. So, okay, I want to start off by showing you a drawing. This drawing clearly shows how a tire is made from the sap of a rubber tree. Right? I don't know what you're laughing at. Okay, let me show you another chart then. This chart clearly shows how an airplane is made from metal plates. Oh, I can't convince you of that. What about this one? Okay, this chart shows how a painting is made from paints and brushes and a palette and whatnot. Well, of course it doesn't show those things. Well, then how about a chart like this that you've probably all seen at some time or another? It's a chart like this, and a lot of times at the base of this chart, you'll see a statement made that will be something along this order. How man evolved from a single-celled organism. Does this chart show how anything happened? It doesn't, any more than my pictures of the metal plates turning into an airplane. This chart just is something that they developed, and of course, this is a simplistic chart, but this is a chart that they try to show us the progression of things that evolved. But it doesn't show how anything happened. It doesn't show how, for example, the first original single cell turned into a fish, and how the fish supposedly turned into a frog. In order to show how, if you were here last night, you would have to show how, on the DNA level, how information was added to the code to add those organs and various aspects to the bodies of a creature to turn it into something else. This chart doesn't show how anything. And it supposedly shows how, there you go, there you have the reptile turning into a bird. Oh, and they love to look at certain fossils that they find, fossils like this one, and they'll say, oh, look, this is a reptile turning into a bird. No, it isn't. It's a reptile buried in a rock. And they say, well, look at the little black lines above it. Those are probably little hairs that are turning into feathers. well, prove it. Where's the feather, you know, and so forth. Or they'll say, you'll see fossils like this, discovered in Europe, and this is the famous Archaeopteryx. And interestingly, the only specimens of this creature ever found were amazingly found by the same guy. Does that throw any kind of a dubious slant on it? If you look at the feathers, in fact, many people have, they've looked at the strikes of the feathers, and there's actually a double strike on some of them, leading many people to think this is a forgery, it's a fake. It could easily be proved if the museum in London that has this fossil, if they would be willing to test it to make sure that it wasn't some sort of a cement used to kind of fabricate it. They could easily prove it. Guess what? Nobody's allowed to touch the fossil. Of course not. They don't want it to be found out to be a fake. But even if it isn't, it's a feathered creature. It's a bird, if that's what it is. There's no such thing as a reptile bird. But these are the only kind of fossils that have ever been found to try to show you that happened. It hasn't. So now when you think about it, this is the area we want to look at today where some sort of an early ape-like creature turned into a human being. And this is what their chart typically looks like. We have probably all seen a chart similar to this, right? We've all seen it. In fact, this has made its way around the world over and over for the last 160 years since Darwin's book. Some of them are very elaborate. You should see some of the ones from India. It has not eight creatures on, but like 30 some. It's like, where in the world are you getting all these creatures from? But this chart has become so commonplace and so recognizable that when somebody wants to make a joke of it, you can understand the joke because you already know the beginning chart that they're operating from. Let me show you what I mean. Here is a chart that somebody drew who did not like football. So what they did is they drew this chart like this. Okay, so now, this is funny, but it's only funny because you already knew the original chart. Do you follow me? So this gets funny that way. Now, if I could sort of understand that, being an Eagles fan, I could understand if that helmet had the Dallas Cowboys star on it, then I would agree with this chart. All right, so, hey, yeah. But anyway, or how about a chart like this? You've heard of the evolution of man, right? What about the evolution of woman? You see, okay, I better quit while I'm ahead. I think some Rotten Tomatoes are gonna suddenly start coming up. Okay, but you get the idea. So this chart is so well known, it's so well ingrained in people's minds that they think it's true. So you can do an aberration on it and you understand the humor because you understand the original chart. So what we want to do is look very briefly at some of the aspects of this chart and some of the interesting conclusions that they've come with alongside each of these members. So let's start with the first guy that they have on the chart. When this chart was first drawn, they called the first guy on the chart the evolutionary Adam, knowing that we who believe the Bible say that the first man was Adam, so that they will say the first creature that eventually turned into both modern humans and modern man, that was the evolutionary Adam. So they put him on the chart. Interestingly, they've never found him. They've never found anything that qualifies as the earliest ancestor of both modern day apes and human beings. And in fact, this was first popularized in a book called The Last 2 Million Years. And even in that book, they detailed what the creature even looked like, as though anybody even knew. They never even had any fossils. They talked about him being a tree swinger and all that, and yet they concluded by saying this: however, no traces of such a creature have yet been found. So even they, many scientists have said, hey, look, we can't do that. We can't put on a scientific chart a creature that we don't even have any evidence for. It's assumed in their minds, and they understand that. So they removed him from the chart. If they can remove him, I think it's probably safe enough for us to remove him as well. Who's next on the chart? By the way, there are lessons to be learned at each step of the way, and this first one was, purely imaginative evidence cannot be included in a scientific chart. They still try that all the time, but it always comes to light that it didn't work later on. So imaginative evidence is not part of a scientific conclusion. Who's next on the chart? Well, Ramapithecus was a creature that they had discovered back in the 60s, and it was a piece of a jawbone that turned out by the early 1980s, and they thought that this was the earliest form of human. It turned out by the 1980s to have been a piece of a jawbone from a baboon. But they had interpreted this thing for like 20 years as a piece of a jawbone from your ancestor. Turned out to be from a baboon. So their conclusions were completely false. In fact, I found a tooth in my yard, a fossilized tooth. I studied that tooth and studied it, and I know that the creature looked something like this. I mean, I don't know if it was exact, but I know it looked something like this. No, okay, you get the idea though. This is a little piece of bone that they tried to convince people for decades that this came from an ancestor. I don't know how many people believed it, but now they've withdrawn it because it turned out, no, it was just from a baboon. So they have removed it from the chart. If they can, we can too. Who's next on the list? We'll find out in a moment, because the lesson to be learned from that is one cannot possibly know much at all from such scant evidence. What they can know is that this looks exactly like a baboon, and so that's what they concluded it was. It's no different from a baboon. So next on the list is Australopithecus, which means southern ape. And that's a pretty good name for it, because that's probably all it is. It's a southern ape. But now it gets a little more interesting, because we want to show you some pictures of some of this. But Australopithecus has several different members to this classification, and they're coming up with stuff all the time. We were just down at the Smithsonian, because there's a church up in Harrisburg that supports our ministry that wants to do, again, one of my trips to the Smithsonian, where the whole church goes down and they go through the, and so we went down to scout out to see what had changed. A whole bunch of stuff had changed. I think I mentioned last night how they've completely abandoned even trying to explain the Big Bang, trying to explain life from non-life. They don't even touch it. They just assume that somehow it happened. So somehow the science is now gone from that. But they have different creatures that they're adding to them all the time. One of the more famous is Zinjanthropus, or the black skull from East Africa. Another one is Tongue Child, which is found in South Africa. And then here's one of the famous ones, Lucy. This is what I kind of named this program after, Lucy. Because Dr. Johansson is the one who discovered the Lucy skeleton even before he was a PhD. And this is what he hung his fame and his world, his fortune, his fame and fortune on, is the discovery of Lucy. So let's have a look at that briefly. Here's what a regular human skeleton, an adult skeleton, would look like. If you put Lucy next to a regular human skeleton, what's the first thing you notice about her? It's her height. She's only about 3.5 feet. Guess what? About the size of a chimpanzee or a young gorilla. That should be the first evidence right there. Sort of like looking at the earth still mostly covered by water, first evidence that there was a global flood. That's the first evidence. But now let's have a look. There is the actual Lucy skeleton. Many, many people, scientists, by the way, even evolutionists, have looked at this and they've said, oh, I don't know, no. You only have about 40% of the skeleton there. And if you look at the skull fragments, there's only a very few skull fragments there. And they've been able to conclude that the skull is basically no different than that of a modern day gorilla. A little bit like the bone from Ramapithecus, it turned out to be from a baboon. They say we can't see any difference between a modern day gorilla and these bones here from Lucy. So she was probably an extinct gorilla or a type of gorilla that went extinct. But in any event, the skull fragments no different than from a regular gorilla. And she has all the characteristics of all the other bones, all the characteristics of just being a regular old tree swinger. That turns out to be what most scientists have thought about Lucy, even though they like to shout very loudly that she's an ancestor of yours. No, she isn't. And in fact, most scientists have rejected her. But since there are still some that cling to her, and by the way, for a long time, the Smithsonian had nothing at all to say about Lucy. Now they've added a little thing in the corner showing her, you look at her and looks surprisingly like a chimpanzee. So I'm thinking, well, why even bother, guys? I don't know who's going to believe you anymore. But in any event, so Lucy is the one that's there. So they have removed her from the chart for the most part. I haven't put a red X through her. It's an orange X. Most people have rejected her. But there's a few holdouts who still like to think that she's an ancestor. And who's next on the chart? Homo habilis. Now, this is the guy who's the handyman. This is the guy who is now supposedly evolved enough to be starting to use tools. And now he's using tools in his trade, and he's figuring out things by using tools. So Homo habilis, the most famous specimen of this is 1470 man. Now, you might say, oh, that sounds technical, 1470 man. I mean, how does it wind up with that name? Folks, it's nothing technical at all. If you look at the skull, which is in the Kenya Museum of Natural History, it's specimen number 1470. That's all it is. So they call it 1470 man. Let's have a look at 1470 man. That is the skull. Now, to an untrained eye, and I am an untrained eye, I would look at that and I would say, well, I would have no idea what that thing is, because there's parts of it that are missing. You notice all the cheekbones are missing, all of the teeth and the entire lower jaw are missing. And by the way, when bones like this are found, they don't come with the box top of the puzzle to tell you how to assemble it. So what they'll do is they'll take the pieces and they'll assemble it as best they can, hopefully as best they can, being honest about it, and they'll glue it onto some sort of a substrate like that blue stuff there to try to help you understand what this thing looks like. So there's the skull at an angle. What is it? I have no idea. But notice again the pieces that are missing. Look at all the facial bones are literally isolated. If you take these bones right here, and if you isolate them, now look again, that's what the bones look like, isolate them out. How do you know how to put them together? If you want your creature to look a little bit more ape-like, all you'd have to do is take those bones and rotate them out ever so slightly, giving you a big jaw. If you want him to make him look a little more human-like, all you do is rotate him in a little bit the other way, give him a smaller jaw, he'll look more human. Which one is it? How would you know? How would you know how to put it together? You don't. So a lot of times you put it together according to your bias. So let's have a look at this. So you have this skull. And so what they tried to do is they tried to imagine what the rest of the skull looked like. So then the scientists literally created casts and they tried to figure out what the rest of it looked like. So now it looks a little, let's just say it looks a little more ape-like, who knows? And let's just pretend that this is what the creature looked like. So far, so good, I'm not gonna argue with them. But now here's where I do begin to argue with them. The final drawing that makes it into National Geographic, that makes it into the textbooks, that makes it into the museums, it always looks something like this. And then there's often a disclaimer underneath it, artist rendition only. Well, who bothers to look at that? Most people, when they see the magazines in the doctor's office, they look at the pictures and they go, oh, look at that, there's an ape man, supposedly my ancestor. They don't look behind the scenes to see how in the world they wound up coming up with that. Here is what they'll draw. There's no way you would know the creature looked like that from that skull. You might be able to ascertain that it had dark skin simply because the skull was discovered in Africa. Okay, fine, we'll be okay with that. How would you know that the nose looked like a chimpanzee? How would you know that the lips stuck out like a chimpanzee from that skull? You couldn't know that from that skull. It's all bias going on there. Now, to understand what I mean by that, let me show you a guy by the name of Ronald Irvin, who is an excellent medical illustrator. Look at the kind of stuff he does. He and other artists were often hired to paint scenes to make them look like it matches evolution. And that's what the rest of the article is talking about. And told to make them fit the evolutionary view. In this particular article, Ronald Irvin was shown or was describing what it was like to sit in the studio with several other artists. And they were given a cast. Now picture this. They were given a cast of a skull. Each one of them got the same one. They're given a cast of the skull and they were told, paint what you think the creature looked like. Now, how would you know where to start? How would you know what to paint? As an artist, you would say to the guy who gave it to him, what is this? Is this a human, whatever? No, we're not gonna tell you. Just paint what the creature looked like. But they didn't. They told them, oh, this is a Homo habilis, or this is a Ramapithecus, or whatever. And what's that gonna do in the mind of the artist? That's going to immediately plant something in his mind that might not have even been there. He's going to go, Ramapithecus or Homo habilis. Oh, wait. Oh, I remember my high school years. That was one of those ape men. Okay, I'll paint an ape man here. And so he described the scientist or the person who hired them to do this coming behind the artist and saying, make him look a little bit more ape-like here. Going to the next guy, make him look a little more human-like there. Is that science, folks? No, that's not science. That's abuse of science. That's abuse of the evidence to try to come up with evidence to support your idea. So another lesson to be learned is scientists are not above being biased. Unfortunately, true science is often derailed by the influence of bias. And by the way, what do we mean by being biased? We are all biased toward one view or another. Let me explain what I mean by that. So along comes an evolutionist and we'll look at a skeleton lying in the dirt that they've just uncovered, of some sort of a hominid creature or whatever. According to his bias, he will look at the bones and say, I wonder how this supports my view that we evolved from an ape-like creature. He already presupposes that to be true. The creationist, according to his bias, will come up and look at the same evidence. We all look at the same evidence. The creationist view would be, how does this support my bias that the Bible is true and we were created as human beings distinct from monkeys? How would this support my view? You see, we approach the evidence with bias, and we understand that. So they're taking the evidence and literally skewing it toward their bias and recreating it like in the form of artwork to make it fit their bias. And that's where it gets very dangerous. But let me tell you something else about this guy. Back when evolution first got started, it was a highly, highly racist idea, because the subtitle on Darwin's book included the statement, "The preservation of favored races." So in the name of science, terrible things were done to, like, for example, the Aborigines of Australia. The Australians eventually themselves put a stop to that. But in the name of science, they did all kinds of things. And so black people from different countries were looked as not as evolved as we Europeans. And that was what their bias was 160 some years ago. Now, they will distance themselves from that dramatically, but it's full of it. Evolution history is full of that kind of racism. So let me just tell you what happened here. This man, Oda Benga, was from Togo, West Africa, and it's a long story, I won't get into how it happened, but somehow he got over here to this country, and he wound up in the Bronx Zoo. He did not speak any English. He wound up in the Bronx Zoo, and by the way, we're talking about just over 100 years ago in this nation. He wound up in the Bronx Zoo as an example of a man who is still evolving. And so that was a big draw to the zoo. So people would come out to see that ape man. And by the way, if you question any of the things I'm teaching you tonight, I got a lot of my information from the Evolution Encyclopedia. It's their book. So I'm not slanting this with creation bias. It's their book that I'm getting most of this information from. So Oda Benga, and you can look him up, you can read about him. And so he was in the zoo, and so a lot of people came out to see him. In fact, some of the little kids who would come out to see him would be, you know, real bratty, and they would poke fun at him. "Hey, you ape man." And so this guy was demeaned. And so a lot of people got angry at this, and they complained to the zoo. And the zoo responded by saying, "Oh, no, Oda Benga is an employee here." Really? Do you know where all the other employees went at the end of the day? They all went home. Do you know where Oda Benga went? Back into the primate cage. Eventually, they let him go, and eventually he committed suicide. Away from his family, away from anything familiar, and having been essentially told that he was just an ape man, something less than a human being. Here he is, a human being made in the image of God, made to be less than that. Just over 100 years ago in this nation. And that was called science. So in any event, 1470 man. But here's an interesting aspect of 1470 man. All they ever had was the skull. And when they dated the skull, he turned out to be older than all the creatures that he had supposedly evolved from. Now, how could that be? So what they did is they tweaked the formula to get it up to more realistic dating. Now, that brings up a question that I always get, and that is, how do scientists know how old a fossil is? Here is the answer, and I'm not trying to be funny. Here is the answer. They don't know, they guess. That's essentially what it is. They try to put all these scientific tools to use and whatever, make it sound all scientific. I'm sorry, it's still all guesswork. I know too many geologists and paleogeologists and whatnot who've become Christians who would say, yeah, that's exactly what we used to do. We used to kind of fudge the numbers. Here's the deal. The problem is akin to this. Picture if you came into this room tonight and there was a candle burning on this table, and I asked each one of you, how long has it been since that candle was first lit? Could you answer the question? There's no way you can answer the question, because you don't know if it was one of those 3-foot Amish candles when it was first lit, or if it was a short candle. Is it a fast burning wax, a slow burning wax? Was it first lit back in 2004 and put in a drawer here and just pulled out again tonight and relit? You don't know. So you would just guess. It's the same deal with finding a fossil. They don't know how old it is, so they guess. There is a formula for dating rocks, and it is a solid formula. The problem with the formula is you cannot possibly know certain values of the formula. If you knew those values absolutely, you could come up with an exact age of the rock. Unfortunately, there's no way to know. And if there was a global flood, and there was, that would have saturated the rocks and changed the composition chemically anyway, and that would have influenced what the rocks look like today. In any event, there's no way they know. So all they do when they adjust this, when they say, oh man, this guy's way too old, all they do is go back into the formula and tweak the numbers to make it appear more to what they thought it should be. Again, folks, that's just abuse of science. That's purely bias going on there. So who's next on the list? Homo erectus. Now, he's the guy who's standing up right now. He's walking around. By the way, some of the most famous of these are Peking Man or Java Man. These turned out to be all apes or monkeys, nothing in between. Or Turkana Boy turned out to be, he's another one from South Africa. He turned out to be fully human. So what's he on? What is he doing on a chart right in the middle of the missing links type of thing? That's always been a question I've had. In any event, so that's Homo erectus. And when you discover things like this, when a new bone is discovered, do they keep it hidden? No way. When a new bone is discovered, that it gets plastered on the newspapers, plastered on the front of all the major magazines in this way. Oh, look, how man became man. Yes, I'm going to be able to open up this magazine and see how an ape became human. Unfortunately, you open it up, you read the story, it says nothing about how it happened. Again, remember how the plates became an airplane, how the paints become a painting. Doesn't say anything about how an ape becomes human. I've had apes as pets, and I can tell you there is a huge difference between an ape and a human being. Apes do not appreciate art. They do not know anything about music. They cannot appreciate that. They cannot speak a language. They cannot write. There's so many differences between apes and humans. Yes, of course, we would have a lot of common DNA because we have two forward-facing eyes. We have five digits on each finger and so forth. So DNA is a blueprint for building things. So of course, much of our DNA is going to be similar, but where it's different is majorly significant. So in any event, so you see these discoveries, they'll wind up on the covers of these magazines. And oh, look at this guy. Man, it's a perfect painting. Look at that. How man began. It's even a drawing of your ancestor. Look, he even has a cut on his face because maybe he got scratched by a thorn when he's doing his berry hunting. Look at this guy. Oh, man, how apes became human. It doesn't get more specific than that. That's what I want to learn. How did an ape become human? You open up the magazine, you read the article, it says nothing about how. But most people, just kind of blinded to it, will just look at the title and they'll think science has proved the how. Read the article. It never tells you how it happened. They just think it happened. And they have all these scientists making all these quotes. It still never tells you how it happened. Unless you just think I'm only picking on Time magazine. What about National Geographic? Same thing there. By the way, when my kids first saw this particular picture, they said, Dad, I think there's evidence for evolution after all. I said, why? They said, Dad, take off your glasses a minute. So I've written my kids out of my will, No, but seriously, it doesn't end there. It keeps going. I mean, even supposedly respectable magazines, I don't know, so many of these magazines have lost their credibility by now, and not just politics. They've lost it with things like this. You know, where we came from, where we're going. In this magazine, they show that, you know, in another million years, you and I are going to have long tubes with eyes on them. So, sort of like Martians have. You know what Martians look like, right? Everybody knows what Martians look like, you know. They're green, of course. Anyway. So it gets to be a joke, but the magazines try to help the evolution community along. It's all full of just presuppositions and gross exaggerations. And here's another lesson to be learned. A picture can truly be worth a thousand words. You can put a picture of anything and people will believe it just because it looks like something credible. So a picture is truly worth a thousand words. You have to look behind what the picture represents. They've removed him from the chart. I suppose we can remove him too. And of course, Turkana Boy turns out to be fully human, as do the next two. Cro-Magnon Man turned out to be nothing more than just human beings buried in caves in France. In fact, when they first found them, they said, these look like fully humans, but look at the cave walls. There's simple art on the walls, and human beings don't live in caves. Folks, by October of 1986, even Smithsonian Magazine finally admitted Cro-Magnon Man, it was actually fully human, just working out a strategy for survival by living in a cave. Because caves are free, they typically are warmer in the wintertime, cooler in the summer. As far as the simple art on the wall, oh, that proves that they are an ape man? Folks, have you been to a modern art museum lately? Okay, so I mean, point made. I mean, you know, I have to tell you, I'm going to tell you something. I've never done this, I don't think, but I have to tell you this. If you ever go to Rogers, Arkansas, who's the guy who started Walmart? Sam Walton, where he had, you can actually go in the original Walmart there, okay? So it's funny, what they have done, what the family's done, they've sponsored this big museum of art representing different time frames in the American history. You go in the early one, and the art is exquisite. You spend the whole day in there just looking at the beautiful art. Then you go into more modern times, and it's still very good, whatever. You go into the current modern times, you walk through the museum going, what? It's like a giant canvas with a big red dot. Oh, that's got to be worth $2 million, you know. And you look at the next one, and it's a big squiggly line that looks like somebody threw up on it. And you go, and this is the modern art, okay? It's like Francis Schaeffer once said, art reflects the society. I would be willing to believe that. Okay, so Cro-Magnon man, he turned out to be fully human being, just working out a strategy for survival. Same thing with Neanderthal. Turns out it was just a bunch of people living in the Neander Valley of Germany, and they looked pretty much exactly like we did. In fact, they had a larger brain case. Interestingly, their brain case was larger in the area of sight. So a lot of people have found now, especially Jack Quazzo, who studied them, he was the world's leading expert on Neanderthal man. He has found micro paintings among their artifacts, and they're so tiny that if you look at them through a magnifying glass or anything to magnify the painting, you can actually even see what they did the paintings with. And it's almost impossible to do a painting that small on a stone. And he's theorizing that Neanderthals had much better eyesight than you and I did. And they could actually see small to do micro paintings of ocean scenes and trees. And it's astounding. So anyway, Neanderthal man. It used to be that in the Smithsonian Institute, the last exhibit they used to have at all, because all the evidence just began to, you know, just sort of lose credibility. They had this little mannequin of a supposedly an anthropologist digging in the dirt for fossils. And so you can see on the map behind her, that map was coded. And it says, the coding underneath it said, the orange part is known Neanderthal sites. So in other words, they know that everywhere where it's orange, Neanderthals lived all through that area. They know it. Known Neanderthal sites. Then I would tell my groups, look at the railing that you're leaning on. And it has these little signs screwed to it. What's new? Neanderthals lived in Europe, blah, 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 blah. So this map is wrong. So I love that. Okay, I'm glad they at least admit it, at least in some cases where they're dead wrong about stuff. But how many people have they duped along the way to getting them to believe that there's somehow this ape-like creature used to be, you know, almost there, but not quite fully human. Well, Neanderthals turn out to be fully human, and then there we are at the end. We're called by them Homo sapiens, and I think we're fully human. So, there you have the chart. It doesn't end there, because in more modern times, you have Piltdown Man. For example, you might have heard this. Back in 1912, Piltdown Man was discovered. And it was discovered by the guy in the top row, second from the right, standing in front of the portrait of Darwin. He's standing there looking very proudly on at Sir Arthur Keith, who is sitting at the table measuring the skull. Sir Arthur Keith is famous for making this statement. I'm glad for his honesty. Quote, evolution is unproved and unprovable. We believe it only because the only alternative is creation, and that's unthinkable, end quote. So we'll believe something totally nonsensical that you can't prove scientifically, only because we don't want to believe the Bible. So, Piltdown Man, oh man, this was wonderful evidence for evolution. Until several decades later, and you can look up any search engine with this, just type it, Piltdown Man, turned out to be a complete hoax. He had taken a human skull and an orangutan jawbone, had filed the teeth and stained them both with a chemical to make them look old. And fooled everybody. The point is, any one of these scientists could have tested the bones for the presence of that chemical. If they had seen that the chemical was used, they'd realize, fake. They didn't want it to be fake, though. They wanted this to be evidence. So they just kind of glossed over that. They didn't want it to be discovered as for what it was. So then later on in 1925, you've heard of the famous Scopes monkey trial. And of course, this is, they used the evidence from Piltdown Man as evidence that you should be able to teach evolution. And they also used a tooth. They said, look, this is a tooth from Nebraska Man. And they had all these drawings of Nebraska Man. And turns out 2 years after the trial, they went to the place where this tooth was discovered and they found out it was from a peccary, which is a pig, which is still alive today. So it turned out both bits of evidence used at the trial were false. False evidence used at the trial. And of course, even though Clarence Darrow and the evolutionists lost the case, they won in the minds of the Americans, and eventually evolution got taught in the schools, and now it's gone full circle. Now it's evolution only in the schools, as you're well aware. So that was the case back then. By the 1972, there was another major wonderful discovery. Look at this, modern day ape men. And if you're trying to convince people of that, what kind of picture would you put on the cover of your magazine? An ape creature or a human creature in a tree, making him look like he's kind of an ape running around there in the trees. And so look inside the magazine, look at the amazing pictures. It's all these creatures living in caves, just like the cavemen way back in the Stone Age. And look at this, Stone Age hammers, like right out of the textbook that we used to have in South Africa, showing, you know, the tools supposedly used by Stone Age man. So they would bring the photojournalists with helicopters, and they would climb down the trees under the watchful eyes of the government officials, and they would photograph these Tasate people. This is all in one of the islands of the Philippines, the discovery of the Tasate people. Until somebody went into the jungle when they weren't supposed to be there and discovered the whole thing was a hoax. Here are the Tasate people out of their caves, you know, literally trading with people down in the valley and everything. They said, what happened? The whole story was a fake, was a forgery, was a hoax. Here, some government official had tried to make a name for himself. He wanted fame and fortune. He said, man, I know how to get it. I'll find evidence for evolution. So he went to this remote tribe of people, the Tasate, and he said, act and look a certain way, and I'll take care of you. So the lie worked for a while. But as soon as it was exposed, all these magazines had to retract their stories because it all turned out to be fake. So here's another lesson to learn. Don't be too quick to jump on anybody's bandwagon. You could wind up getting stung. By the way, this would include creationists. I get stuff all the time from people who say, oh, look at this photograph. This proves evolution is not true. This proves that this part of the Bible is true. And I'd have to write back to them and say, no. That was a photo contest where they tried to make, the goal was to make this look like this, and that's not even real. So be very careful what you believe. Be very careful what your source of authority is. You know you can trust anything on the internet. Anyway, no, obviously not. This you can trust 100%. Be careful what human you believe. Be careful what human you follow. Well, it doesn't end there. There's the map. They're either all humans or all apes. There's nothing in between. But this has led many scientists to look at their fellow evolutionists and make some incredible statements. Look at what Dr. Greg Kirby says. Well, if you were to spend your life picking up bones and finding little fragments of head, little fragments of jaw, there's a very strong desire there to exaggerate the importance of those fragments. I guess there would be. Lord Solly Zuckerman says, students of fossil primates have not been distinguished for caution. The record is so astonishing that it is legitimate to ask whether much science is in this field at all. These are evolutionists looking at fellow evolutionists saying, come on, guys, get real. You're not using real evidence here. Now, let me wrap this up by showing you two mathematical impossibilities according with the evolution model. Let's pretend, now we're told that human beings have been evolving for the last 2 to 4 million years. So now imagine this. Imagine, let's just say 2 million years ago, Imagine that there was one male and one female ape. And by the way, male and female is never explained to us by evolutionists. How in the world those incredible differences between us, between male and female, how that ever evolved is a total mystery to them. But let's just say there was a male and a female of an early ape form of creature that could produce a baby, right? Let's just say that was about 2 million years ago. Let's just pretend that due to high infant mortality or wars or starvation or diseases or whatever, the population only doubles every 1,000 years. And I'm being super conservative here because we know the population doubles way, way, way less than that. But let's just say the population only doubles every 1,000 years. So you start off with two. Then 1,000 years later, you have a net of 4. 1,000 years later, you have a net of 8. 1,000 years later, you have a net of 16. Are you with me? Okay, so let's just say that that's how slowly the population doubles. Folks, after just 60,000 years, even if you drain the oceans, you wouldn't even have enough room on this planet, standing the ape man shoulder to shoulder around the whole world. You would not even have enough room on this planet to house all the apes after only 60,000 years. After only 100,000 years, even if you took all the visible stars and turned them into planets and moved all the apes up to them, you would not even have enough room on all the planets that we can see, all the stars converted to planets that we can see, if you just double the population every 1,000 years. After 100,000 years, you don't even have enough room in the celestial bodies. But they're saying 2 to 4 million years, not just 100,000 years. So it's a mathematical impossibility already. Here's another way to look at it. Here's a picture of the Earth. There's the equator. Now think about it. Your ancestor, if this whole evolution model is correct, was a hunter-gatherer. They cannot live in a cold climate or they will die. You understand that? And they have to get food around the clock. So the only place where they could live effectively is in that green zone, which is the equatorial zone. If they wander too far into the temperate zone, they're going to start dying off in the winter because they won't have enough food, right? So now if you look at the area where they would be forced to live on the planet, it would be that area in dark. Folks, if there have been that many hominids, there should have been trillions upon trillions upon trillions of hominids, ancestors of yours, that would have lived in those dark areas over the last 2 million years. They aren't there. Do you know why? Because they never were. They never existed. They're not there. Folks, if you take all of the bones that the evolutionists have used to try to convince us that we evolved from an ape and put them all together, it would fill a box about the size of a coffin. But you should be able to go anywhere in the world in that dark area and find evidence of evolution. Well, you think your ancestor was an ape-like creature? Uh-uh. Let me show you something amazing. That was your ancestor. You doubt me? Okay, let me show you, because remember, picture's worth 1,000 words. Your ancestor, and you can see that same sort of drawing, you know, as time goes on. I'm not sure what you're laughing at, so I think I'm just going to end the session right now. Thank you so much.